Welcome to the Cemetery Chronicles. Hosted by two friends who manage cemeteries in the Twin Cities, this podcast takes you behind the gates and into the unique world of cemeteries. Join us as we share heartfelt stories, unexpected humor, and the profound moments that come with a career dedicated to honoring life and legacy. From the Paradise Picture Studio, here are your hosts, Dominic Pierre and Bobby Schoenrock.
Bobby, episode 26, officially here. How are you doing?
Good, good. Just hanging in the Paradise Picture Studio.
Paradise, yeah, exactly. Sitting at the poker table at the Paradise Picture Studio. We almost did the episode sitting outside at Union Cemetery, but we were afraid the water is officially off right now because we have a water leak, and we're afraid people would be coming and interrupting the podcast to let us know that the water's off.
That the water's off.
And that they're not happy about it. So we figured that might not be a bad idea. Yeah. So we came into the inside Paradise Picture Studio at the poker table.
Good choice.
Yeah, it's a little cooler in here, too. So
I don't know. It's pretty nice out there.
Nice outside. So here we are. We're in the middle, well, the early half of August, I should say.
Yeah.
The summer is winding down very quickly. I can't believe that we're in August already.
Crazy.
I know. We talk about it. We've talked about it the last few weeks, how we're losing seasonal help, but now it's like actively upon us. We're now actively losing seasonal help.
Yeah, I had one that just left, period.
Well, I have one guy who is leaving tomorrow. Well, I talked about it in the episodes before that I was like, my goodness, this is way too early for school to start. And I found out that, no, he is not starting school right away. He's actually taking a week off for vacation with the family, and then I think he's going to some cabin first. So it's a couple weeks until school starts. He just has a couple weeks off.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
See, I used to tell those kids, well, don't you like making money? And they're like, no, I like to go on vacation.
I kind of agree. But, however, when I was that age, though, I was all about, like, in the summer, making as much money as I possibly could.
To
be honest, I was working year-round, too. Like, when I was 14, I worked at McDonald's. I just didn't let them know that I was 14 because they weren't supposed to hire a 14-year-old. But I wanted to make money so bad that I was actually looking everywhere to try to find a gig.
And did you just walk down there?
I rode my bike down there. Yeah. So because it's a half mile down the road from where I grew up. Yeah. So I think I was 14, but I was 15 in just a few days. I started when I was 14. Making such little money, it's unbelievable. But I was making money.
Yeah.
And before that, I was cutting all the neighbors' lawns for $20 a pop, which is actually pretty lucrative. I think I had about six lawns around the neighborhood. You're making $120 a week.
So you take the big lawnmowers from the cemetery and go cut the neighbor's lawn and then put the gas in from the cemetery.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that. And I had a push mower. No, it wasn't even one that it was self-propelled. It was a push mower. But you know what? Hey, I was making good money.
Yeah.
I saved all my money one summer and I bought one of those. What was X Games? Like those bikes where those handlebars spin around.
Like a trick bike type
trick
thing.
Yeah, with pegs on the front and the back.
Sure.
Man, and it was legit. And bought that. It's still sitting in my garage, actually. I'm just waiting. Like, hey, I spent so much time and effort to buy this thing. I'm waiting for my kids to get old enough to be like, here you go, Daddy. Daddy worked his butt off for this. And he'll be like, this is 50 years old.
Like, you can't even buy me a car?
Is that the truth?
I want an electric bike. I don't want this.
True. Anyway, so it's been a fun week around here. Obviously, water. We got the water issues now. One of our main lines, a 4-inch line, burst over the weekend. And then
luckily a patron saw and came knocking on the door of your house to let you know.
So went out there and I was just hoping, you're like, you see the leak coming out of the ground and you're like, okay, I can turn the water off, and I'm praying it's not what I think it is, because I know there's a main line under there, but I hope it's one of the lines that shoot off the main line. Nope, couldn't be so lucky. It was definitely the 4-inch main line. I wasn't here on Monday because I was attending a funeral for my wife's family. So all I could do is really just let my guys know, like, hey, water's off. There's a leak on the north side of 25. Take a peek at it. And so they had everything kind of taken care of, but or they tried to. They cut everything out and re-glued things back together. However, there was a little little bend in the repair. Turned the water back on. And we had drip, drip, drip. Right, it was just a slow drip. So we're like, hey, let's not cover this thing back up. Let's just monitor it. Let's see if it can. You know, you have that false hope. I always in the back of your mind, like, hey, there's a lot of rust in our water. Maybe it'll self heal.
Anytime there's a little drip, you're like, oh yeah, it'll go away. It'll go away. I know it's not going to get worse in an hour.
Yeah. But luckily, so then we're like, let's just monitor this. So then I go back into the office, and luckily we have a well system out here, and we have a fancy technology on our well system. So if it drops below, I think it's 15 pounds of pressure. We usually have it set at 60. So if it drops below 15 pounds of pressure, it sends a text message notification to myself and also my grounds foreman, letting him know that, so that we'd be aware if a leak happened on the weekends or something like that, we'd know. Sure enough, I get a text message, and this is the first time it's actually been the text message used for an actual leak, because it has to be a pretty major leak to drop your pressure down that low, and get a text message, your pressure is only 10 pounds. Like, so I get on the radio real quick and call my grounds manager, like, hey, Ben, tell me you're playing with the well and you turn the water off. Nope, didn't do that, Dominic. Like, ah, crap, drive up, and it's just spewing out of the four inch main, and it's flooding a section. Like, oh, crap.
I will say I drove by. It looked pretty wet around there.
Yeah, so anyway, so the repair gave out, so then we had to turn the water back off. This time we not that we didn't do it proper the first time. You do it quickly the first time until you screw up. Now we just, like, okay, dug out more than we had had to so that the pipe had some flex. We got it all straight, got all the glue on. We're now letting it cure overnight. We're, you know, they recommend what for PVC, 20 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. We're letting this go all night, and we're crossing our fingers that tomorrow morning we turn this water on and we don't have any drips and we're all good.
Like I said, I can swing by and check it if you want me to fix it on the way. I could probably get it going for you.
I thought you were only used to galvanized pipe under roads.
I can fix any pipe. Yeah, we got plastic, galvanized, you name it.
Yeah, we got it all too. And actually, this is coming off an old galvanized pipe, so we have a repair coupling coming off a galvanized pipe, and then we moved it to PVC. So it's kind of in a location where that changed. So we're utilizing it all. It's fun. It's fun. And just cross my fingers that it holds tomorrow. Because there's something about the water being off and people getting super upset about that in the cemetery.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like when you guys don't have your water on yet. I'm like, are you using your sprinkler system at home?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's way too early for that. Okay, we don't have our water on either. So think about it here.
Yeah, no, it's exactly it. And I don't understand it. It's just the entitlement thing. I don't know what it is. It's like,
well, it's the comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Like every time you come out here, the water's on.
Yeah,
and then you come out here, you know, for the 12th time this summer to water your flowers and there's no water on.
Yeah.
Then you're upset. And again, it's not that the water's off. It's that you're emotional when you get here.
Yeah.
And then there's no water.
Yeah.
And then you're worried about your flowers, you know? Yeah. So it all kind of comes into one thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem.
Oh, you're right. But the thing is, what's really tough about it is you're out there and you're busting your butt. Like, I mean, my guys are out there on Monday doing this job, and they know it because they're getting pressure from folks. So they're working fast, but they're working their tails off. I mean, this pipe is probably a good 3.5 feet in the ground. It's 4-inch pipe, and they have to go all around it. So they're hand digging all around this. You know, they're working their butts off. They're sweaty.
Wait,
they're
wait, wait. Union guys using shovels? Oh my gosh. Did you take a video? Do you got a video?
I wasn't here.
Oh my gosh. Your cameras hit that so I can see that? Just wait till I talk to Ben. I didn't even know they use shovels over here.
We own a couple shovels. We have to pull them out. They're nice and brand new looking, but hey, we pull them out. So we got, you know, and then so you work your tail off, you're muddy, you're filthy, you're sweaty, and then you have somebody coming in and complaining. And this is always the complaint too. This is the funny thing. This is the first time this summer that the water's been shut off due to repairs here at the cemetery. And this is always the complaint. Come on, what's water off for? Well, we're doing a repair. That's always your excuse. It's all, I mean, every time I come out here, it's off. It's like, you just want to scream. You've been working so tough. You're working so hard. You're like, no, it's not. It is not always off. What the heck? Yeah, in the
winter.
Give
me a date of the last time you were here that it was off. And I want a time and a date stamp.
I know. It's so frustrating. So anyway, but this is legitimate. Now it's going to be a 2-day ordeal with the
really
water
like
off.
A 3-day, right? Because it's Thursday tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you're right.
Because you had it on for a little while, and then it exploded.
Sunday night we turned it in. That's 4-day. Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Well, you had it on for a little while on Monday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
After we fixed it, and then it blew later on. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, this is now what I'm expecting, and you're going to, because we allow people to plant flowers. I'm totally expecting my flowers die because the water's off. You owe me for my flower.
We usually, I noticed, you know, you said you put some signs out. I noticed them. But what we usually put at the front door is if you need water's off, if you need water, come see us. We have jugs, you know, that we can fill for you to take.
Yeah. You know, so. And I thought about putting that on the signs. I made some. We have one of those Cricut vinyl cutter, you know, stencil cutters. I got it because I can make my grass cutters T-shirts. So they just tell me, hey, what size are you? You know, hey, you're 2X. So we order, you know, you get these green T-shirts that cost like $2 a piece, and then I can cut out the Union Cemetery vinyl or iron-on stuff, and I iron it right on. And I get, so it cost me like $4 a shirt, so everybody gets uniforms.
That's
kind of a nice deal. So I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna invest in this Cricut thing. It's only $100-some. Like, it's gonna save me money on these T-shirts, so I have it. But I also can cut vinyl letters, so I cut vinyl letters to make a nice professional looking sign. This is water's off, sorry for the inconvenience, water's off due to repairs, sorry for the inconvenience. I thought about putting it on there, you know, you can go to the shop because we do have a faucet on the shop that's hooked up to city water. But I'm like, you know what, I don't even want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with people not having jugs and then trying to, you know, do whatever. And I'm like, you know, if they come to the office, I can tell them, oh yeah, you can always go down to the garage and grab it. But
it's tough, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's going to come a time, especially at our place with how old our piping is, that, you know, we have a 200 gallon jug at the main entrance and a 200 gallon jug at the side entrance. Please bring your own, or we have jugs here. And you know, this is your water.
Yeah. Do you guys, at your faucets, do you guys provide jugs?
No.
Yeah.
They tried that, and then they were stealing them. They were knocking them down, running them over.
Yep.
You know, people would leave them out there, or they'd throw them in the road. Someone would run them over. So it never seemed to get back to where they were supposed to be.
Do you ever hear people complain that you don't provide anything?
No.
So we had a guy, he's now passed, but it was like his job. It was his retirement gig. Was what he did was he collected coffee cans, and he made hundreds of these buckets, and he painted them green and then put like a little copper wire on it.
Sure.
So it had a little loop, and they were just little buckets. And every spring he'd come out here to the cemetery and put two on each faucet, hang them on the faucets. Yeah. And every fall he'd take them and go bring them home and fix them. Well, it's really nice, but like people say, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, because now the guy passes away and everybody expects these things to be out there. So now we inherit these buckets. And now these buckets, they're coffee cans, they're rusting through.
Yeah.
And so we're losing some. There's some that have small leaks.
Tough to find, you know.
We
like
can't
a
find coffee
aluminum
cans.
Aluminum coffee can.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So we're just kind of letting them kind of, you know, we get rid of them. Now we have less and less. And we hear, that's the one thing I hear from so many people. They always come up to the office. You realize your buckets suck. Yeah, they're leaking. Like, you know what? You're lucky we have anything out there. I'm thinking I should just take everything, but it's gonna be creating uproar because we created a precedence.
Anytime you provide something and then it's not you know, provided to the fullest,
yep,
then you're going to hear about it, right?
Yep.
This was long before my time that they were having issues with a few buckets that they had out there. So, they haven't had buckets for over 30 years, right?
Yeah.
So even if anybody that was still around when they had buckets, you know,
yeah,
they don't say anything. And most people I talk to, well, yeah, I always just keep a jug in my trunk.
Yeah.
And then I come out and fill up and... You know, and we always, people come down and say, oh, my gosh, I forgot my jug at home. And we have got big watering cans that we always have on.
Yeah.
Right outside the office.
Okay.
In the back. So, you know, our office manager can grab them, say, here you go.
Yeah.
Just bring it back, please.
Do they bring it back?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because we set the buckets out. We try to – it used to be 2 per faucet. Now it's kind of – we are down to 1 per faucet. But I'll tell you, 1 week after we place those buckets out there, half the faucets don't have a bucket. They're either somebody takes them and they bring them to their grave, you know, and water, and they maybe hang it on another faucet or set it in a tree because they're too lazy to walk back to the faucet and put it or take it home. I don't know what happens with them. It's amazing.
Well, like I said, I mean, there's going to be a time, probably not too far from now, that, you know, we're just going to have water at each entrance, and this is where you get water, you know.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, I mean, we have sections that have zero water now.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think that was ever going to be a deal.
Just because you tied up, you had a leak and
well,
like,
just
it.
And they're so rusted out, and the only way to do it is replace everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yep.
And then you're like, well, there's a faucet right across the street.
Yep.
So do we put 4 faucets in here and spend $3,000 to $5,000 replacing it, or do they walk across the street right there?
Yep.
So that's where we're at. But like some of our most like flowers are planted and stuff, that section pretty much is dried up with faucets now.
Yeah.
You know, all around it though. Like the open field that's across the street has 2 faucets right there.
Yeah.
Right now on the kitty corner right across the street. So there's 12 faucets around, you know, just on the other side of the road. But, you know, that it is what it is, right? And so, yeah, we've got probably, I would say, maybe 4 sections or 5 sections without water right now.
Okay.
And like I've got a newer section that I'm trying to, I would like to bring water to, but then it's, how many spigots, you know? And I'm thinking just 1.
Yeah.
And just 1 right at the beginning of the section, and then
when
people pull in, they can fill up and then go water.
Yeah, you're right. And have you ever calculated? I mean, it'd be amazing to calculate, like, how many miles of water line do you have in your cemetery? I bet you we have 4 to 5 miles of water line. It's like, it's crazy.
I think we talk about it like we have, you know, almost 7 miles of road throughout the cemetery. Yeah.
So that makes it probably right around there.
Yeah,
then.
I mean, it'd probably be, you know, somewhere around there. But again, they're, you know, up one side, back down the other side.
Yeah.
So you're almost double, right? So,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I'd wonder what it would be. I mean, our map is about as old as the cemetery itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really brittle.
Oh, your waterline map?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Ours is ours was all in this when they laid out all the galvanized in the older section, the galvanized pipe for the water lines, was all in the head of the superintendent at that time back in the 50s and 60s. And he kept it there. And now all that information is buried out on block 22.
No way.
With him.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we've recreated it just because you can figure out kind of where the water lines are.
Yeah.
Except where in this instance, there was a grave sold by the gentleman who laid all the water lines. He sold a grave in the late 70s, and the person died in 2012 who bought the grave. And we went to dig the grave in the middle of winter, and right down the center of that grave was a 4-inch galvanized water line, main water
line. What are the odds, right?
That's what happens when you don't have it mapped. Oh, yeah. We could do a Sims commercial right here, but I won't. I'll refrain.
our map is pretty spot on, and it's pretty amazing because we towed the line this past year because we had a popular section that the only thing left was, you know, probably 10 feet.
Yeah.
All right, and it goes maybe 60, 80, 100 feet.
Yeah.
And it's 10 foot wide. Well, 3 to 4 of those feet are our main water line. And we said, we're going to lay these out for monument lots. We know where that water line is. And I'm going,
oh,
you
boy.
Guys are nuts. I've yep. had to fix this. Yep. And sure enough, we squeaked through every yep. grave we dug. I was thinking, here we go. This is going to be the one.
Yep.
And we didn't. And actually, then I went up there in the spring and probed.
Yeah.
And we were 2 feet away still.
Yeah.
You know, even at the edge. So, like, it was actually more to the one side than we thought it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we were really in the clear.
Yeah. yeah
so, realistically, favor. We just added, you know, like yeah. 10 to 12 monument lots that yeah. literally all sold from just December to... We just sold the last one in July.
Oh, yeah.
So in 6 months, we sold 10 to 12 monument lots in an area that's been basically full for a few years.
Nice.
And, yeah, so, I mean, toe the line. But like I said, that map was spot on.
That's nice. I mean, it's nice so you can trust it. And typically our maps are pretty close. And but, you know, every once in a while, they, yeah. you caught off guard, and it's what can you do? I mean, even later or earlier this spring, it's weird. Now I have everything laid out. Every new section I lay out, it's all 4 grave lots, 2 grave lots, and I put the cornerstones. Before, it seems like it was, they'd be willy-nilly. You know, so if somebody, so I 2 grave lot, 4 grave lots. So if somebody were to come in and say, hey, I want to buy 3 graves. Okay, you're buying 2 graves in this lot and 1 grave in the next yep. lot over. So you have 3 graves total. What would happen in the 70s, 80s, even 90s is they'd go out and be like, oh, okay, well, I'll just recreate this lot to be a 3 grave lot. We'll move this, so I'll just sell it to you as lot 102, graves 1, 2, and 3. So I'll just move that cornerstone over. So then the next lot is only 1 grave. And it's just a pain. Why that was done like that.
Yeah.
And we found one early this spring in a section where there was basically an extra grave. So all the maps stated that there was so many graves, and then my guys went out because we sold a grave and put a marker out. They were going to go put a marker out, and they're looking at it, and they go, this isn't lining up where my cornerstones are. So yeah. sure enough, we're out there trying to figure out, like, oh, there's an extra grave here. Well, that's nice, and we can sell that extra yeah. grave. But it's like, why wasn't that in the mapping system? And then you have – then right where from where that extra grave was, then we had 2 burials that were on that don't have any memorials. So then you, like, start questioning. And I was like, okay. You know what? I'm positive those burials are there, the full yeah. size, but let's probe. Like, yeah. let's probe. Let's just double check. So we probed and figured out, yeah, there's, yeah. they're there. But it's like, oh, that stuff scares you when
yeah.
that kind of back stuff pops
well,
up.
Well, come on over to Oakland. Because, you know, built in 1853, you've got, you know, here's a 6 grave lot, here's a 12 grave lot, here's yeah. a 8 grave lot, here's a 20 grave lot, here's a 16 grave lot, here's a 8 grave lot,
yeah.
here's a 6 grave lot, here's a 4 grave lot. And you're like, what?
Do they put cornerstones in all
yeah,
those?
Yeah, they got a lot of them.
So they
some
sold
of those,
a lot and
some of those
put the
old, no, they put them all in ahead of time.
Okay.
But some of the old ones, you know, like... They, you know, they had little sandstone corner posts because
yeah, yeah.
the family, that's what they wanted. Well,
yeah.
those things are long deteriorated
oh,
now.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to be able to have markers to go off of and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's some of our lots, like I said, I mean, they just did things kind of so backwards that, you know, some of the lots like, oh, well, this is where the people were only burying caskets in all of our single graves. So they are, you know, 3 feet by 9 feet.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going, holy smokes. And then you go to this one area that's kind of a flatter part that they didn't think they would sell much of.
Yeah.
Well, we sell the heck out of it. But those are the same thing. They're 18 and a half feet.
Yeah.
So everyone's 9'3"
yeah.
instead of 10 feet,
yeah.
you know? And then they're 3.25 instead of 3.5,
yeah.
you know? So it's and just random stuff too, right? Like, because, again, when we started, they kind of wanted everything to face the road. So, you know, a section as it curves around curves with the road.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you have one side of the lot is 31 feet, the other side's 26 feet.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. And then there's like this 4-foot pathway here and a 2-foot pathway on top because the other pie shape had to come in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, yeah, it can be a mess.
Yeah. No, it's so true. But it's, but the thing is, I'm sure at that time everybody was like, you know what, this is the best way to do it. And now you look back and go, no, that wasn't the best way. My way is the best way.
Yeah.
In 100 years from now, somebody's going to be cursing
yeah.
you out,
yeah.
you know.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But it is what it is. It's you just gotta roll with the punches and make it work.
Now that we're talking about mapping systems,
that's true. I mean, that's what makes it so much easier. Is just you. Well, with Sims,
oh, you too.
When you do digitalize your cemetery and you have a GIS mapping, it's you have to have a system in place, like the 2-grave lot, 4-grave lot. But it makes it so much easier because you can visualize it. It's not only just in your mind's eye, it's on a computer screen. You can sure. see the maps. You can see the lots that are behind it, to the north of it, to the south of it, to the east, to the west of it. When you're looking at those old books, you can see lot 127, if the burial's in 127, and then you flip the page and you can see who's in lot 128, who's to the right, or 126, who's to the left.
You know how many copies I make with tape and stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
But the lot, what's the lot in front of it? I don't know, 68? Well, then you have to flip all the way back 68. Sims just makes it so much easier. You look at it all on the computer screen, you can see exactly where every burial is, to the point where you're actually digging a burial. You can say, okay, it's right behind Mr. Johnson's 2x1 marker. It's right in front of the Swenson Monument, the right side of the Swenson Monument, and right, so you can pinpoint exactly where this burial is going to be. Especially in the winter, that makes life a lot easier when you're going out there and trying to find where a grave is. Because how many square feet of section have you blown off just with snowblower to try to find, okay, where's this cornerstone at?
I'm precise. We don't do that.
Well, we are precise because of Sims. Sims has made me precise. So anyways, if you are interested in digitizing your cemetery, which I highly recommend, consider going to simscemeterysoftware.com to learn more.
For over 125 years, Cold Spring has collaborated with death care professionals to deliver innovative permanent memorial solutions that honor family legacies. Their domestic quarries and fabrication facilities ensure a predictable supply chain while providing quality craftsmanship and personal service. They provide custom memorials, columbariums, mausoleums, cemetery enhancements, helping cemeteries and monument retailers make their mark by creating timeless tributes that stand the test of time. With innovative design tools like personal reflections and dedicated support, they make it easy to bring families' visions to life while streamlining your business. Experience unmatched expertise, innovation, and dedication in memorial design with Cold Spring. All right, and we're going to get into Paradise Pictures. Now, I just told Dominic this story off air, but I'll share it with you guys as well. We just did a big, huge monument, big 5-foot monument, massive. I think it was 4 feet wide, 5 feet tall, 10 inches thick, huge, big, thick red monument.
Is this going in your place?
Yeah, they own like 8 graves, the family, and they wanted a picture, and they wanted a custom heart, and it's like 22 or something by 22 or 24, massive.
Wow.
And it's a Paradise Picture special.
Well, that's
not
in their catalog.
No, it's a custom, and it's a heart.
Wow.
And it turned out great.
Yeah.
It has studs that are built into it. And
Paradise Pictures put those in?
Yep, and that's how it came. And just gorgeous. I mean, I can't, like, the family came and looked at it because we want them to look at, you know, when you order something that big custom, right? You want them to look at it. They're crying.
Wow.
That's how nice it was. So when we talk about Paradise Pictures and the job that they do, and they stand behind it too. Like, if there was a problem, one phone call and they'd have a new one made, or they would be working on what's the problem, how do we solve it?
Yeah, they are.
And I got another, we have another one where a family shrunk a picture up for mom, and they're mad because you can't see the roundness of the shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, how many people, you know, have their shoulders next to their neck?
Yeah.
Right? So when you shrink the picture up, it doesn't look right.
Yeah.
So, like, Paradise made it how it should be made.
Yeah.
Like a normal shoulder. And the family doesn't like it. And they're like, that's fine. We'll make it exactly how you want it.
Wow.
you know, not many people have shoulders next to their chin, but, you know, they will do it. But again, Paradise Pictures, been going around since 1991, built to last a lifetime, guaranteed against any damage. Monuments, markers, crypts, or glass front niches. Proud member of the Minnesota Association of Cemeteries. Again, first job free just for listening to the Spectacular Podcast. So if you're looking to do pictures and you run a cemetery, you have a monument company, you have a funeral home, whatever it is that you're doing, and you're selling markers and you want to get into pictures, give ParadisePictures.com or call them at 1-800-960-8040.
I don't know if you noticed over the weekend I got the mail and
I didn't notice that you got the mail over the weekend.
Well, I did. I can't believe you didn't notice that. I did. I went and got the mail and our newest copy of American Cemetery and Cremation was in there. I don't know if you get a subscription of that, but so I'm sitting, I was like, oh, thumb through it real quick. I'm thumbing through that this weekend. And all of a sudden it comes to the full page Paradise Pictures ad, which is great. And also dead center in the Paradise Pictures ad says, listen to Cemetery Chronicles episode 19 to learn more about Paradise Pictures. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. So if you see your latest American Cemetery Cremation magazine flip to, I think it's early, maybe about 15 or 16, somewhere around there. There's a nice, beautiful one page ad for Paradise Pictures. And also for the Cemeteries Chronicles.
Wow, look at that.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, it's about time they recognize greatness, you know.
You mean Paradise Pictures?
Yeah. But episode 19, that was when Scott was here. Yeah. So that's, and
no, I don't think it was. I think it was a different one that Scott went, no, I'm joking.
He just wanted him to listen to the other one. The other one about how to fix water lines.
Yeah, it was such a great episode.
How to pour a foundation.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, when Scott was here, very informative.
Oh, very.
I mean, stuff that, you know, I didn't have a clue about.
Yeah.
And actually, my dad was talking about this today. He's like, I would love to just watch them make one, you know. And so
Scott, let's figure out a field trip.
Scott, if you're listening, yes. my dad says he spends a lot of money over there. So he's waiting for some plane tickets to head out to watch.
Hey, Scott, we should send Bobby and I out there so we can do an ad about how it's done, you know.
Live podcast.
Live podcast, yeah.
No, but great people to work with. They've been, you know, Scott and the group at Paradise has been very supportive of this podcast.
But it makes it so much nice. It's so nice when you have a company that as good as Paradise, and we can fully 100% wholeheartedly back Paradise Pictures. They're such a great company. So
for sure,
thank you guys. Thank you, Paradise. We very much appreciate the support, and you guys are a fantastic company. We couldn't recommend anybody highly.
Yeah, no, and like you said, it's they've been very supportive of us and this podcast. You know, when we were just getting started and wondering how long we'd be doing this, and here we are, you know, half a year in, and we're still going. I guess some people want to listen to us.
Yeah,
so, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't looked at the listening audience yet lately.
Well, I'm excited because I know we do have a couple listeners that are flying in to our cemetery conference, Minnesota Association of Cemeteries, our conference in September coming up very quickly, a little over a month away.
Way too quickly for us here.
Way too quickly. Yeah. You're exactly right. Actually, it's giving me a little bit of heartburn, keeping me up at night a little bit.
My daughter's like tryouts, like pre-tryout skates starts like the night we're up there, and I'm like, holy cow, what's happening? You know, hockey's getting started, and I am actually doing some stuff with the Hockey Association, so I need to be around right after. Yeah. So I go from a convention or a conference for 3 days to basically at a rink for the next 2 weeks after that, and like 2 to 4 hours a day. Helping out with some tryout stuff. So, yeah, we went and, checked out a spot for, you know, maybe next year's conference. And all of a sudden I started thinking, like, we're getting down to, like, a month.
Yeah.
And how did we get to a month away? And I feel like there's so much to do and not enough time to do it. But, I mean, things are handled.
We'll be all right.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
By me, by Dominic.
you're a heavy lifter. You're a heavy lifter. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. We'll be good. It'll be exciting. I'm so much looking forward to seeing everybody and just the camaraderie and just sharing stories.
And it's kind of nice when you're away from the city where, you know, like when we get out of town, and again, away, we're an hour and 20 minutes to an hour and a half away. We're not away, but we're far enough away from where we can't just, you know, drive back for a funeral and then come back, right? Yeah. Which some people probably will. There is always people that do that, and I don't blame them, right? Especially
either.
If you're short staffed.
Yeah.
But it is kind of nice because it feels like people let loose a little more.
Yeah.
Because they don't have like a kid's sporting event to go to because they're at a hotel.
Yeah.
They don't have to go make sure they go to work for an hour and a half in the morning before the first person or right after the first break. They don't have to leave, right? So people let loose a little bit, and seems like you can get a little more out of people, and that's where that camaraderie comes in. And you feed them a few cocktails.
That's true. And to be honest too, I give, and please, if you're listening, you're coming to the Minnesota Association of Cemeteries Conference, I give you all the permission in the world to give Bobby all the hard time in the world about how he does things wrong, because he does need to know that. He does need to hear. His head's getting a little bit big about things. He does need to hear that some of the things that he says on here are just plain wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think most of the things I say on here are wrong, to be honest.
And you have all the permission in the world to come up to me and say, Dom, you're the best. Just, everything you say is just gold.
Yeah. And again, we're going to try to slot an episode, record an episode there. It may get...
It might get a little wild.
Yeah,
it'll
so
be fun,
we'll see. But yeah, it's going to be good. And we're ready for it. And I think we want to shift gears a little bit here and talk about right of inheritance. Is that what we're kind of talking about? And
that kind of a little bit of a shift? But, this is a major thing. This is the thing that I get emails quite often about. So I figure let's record an episode about it.
Half an episode.
Half an episode.
Because we can't shut up about anything else.
That's true. We were going to start it earlier, but you're right. Yeah. And the right of inheritance. And if you're not in the state of Minnesota, we're going to go over kind of some Minnesota state laws, but you probably have your specific laws in your state. And I know that we're very fortunate in the state of Minnesota to have a very specific layout on who inherits lots. I know there's states that don't even have anything mentioned in their law, which then it's kind of up to the cemetery. But the thing is, you have to have protocol.
I talk about this a lot with people. The Midwest, state of Minnesota, like amazing what they have for state statutes, because it's plain, it's cut and dry, right?
For cemeteries,
yes.
But I'm not going to congratulate the state of Minnesota.
a lot of the other stuff. But as far as the cemetery goes, like the state statute's cut and dry. This is what it is, right?
Yeah.
But it can be a nightmare for people. But that's how it's written, and that's how it is. So as great as it is, it can be a pain for people too, because it descends down to the eldest child.
So this is state statute we're talking about, Minnesota state statute. If you want to look it up, it's 525.14. Now, this is off the top of my head.
Ooh, that was pretty good.
I think I'm right, because I've been working with enough emails. I'm pretty positive it's 525.14. Look that up, Minnesota state statute, and it'll come up with the right of inheritance. Now, here's the question I get from folks, that there's where confusion comes into play. Some cemeteries believe that this is just for who can get buried in a lot, and then we'll get questions about, well, who then can determine who gets a monument or who can get markers. It's the same descendant. So basically, whoever is the inheritor of the lot is the one who can determine who can get buried there. Also, setting a marker or monument. Now there's a little caveat in Minnesota state law, because it also gives permission to the spouse. So let's go through it real quick. So if somebody dies in Minnesota state law after, I think it's April 15th of 1981.
Yeah. So let's say John Larson had 10 graves or and six are occupied, four are left.
He died June 1st of 1984.
Yep.
And the lot is still in his name at the cemetery. Who now has the right? Well, you'd ask the family, well, who is John Smith's oldest surviving child? Because the law at that time went to the oldest surviving child. So a lot of times the family would be like, oh, well, that's Jenny Smith.
Yeah.
And is Jenny still living? Yeah, Jenny's still living. Perfect. We'll have,
yeah.
But did John, then the next question should be, did John have a wife at the time that preceded him in death, or that died after him or is still living? And if the answer is yes, that does throw a little bit of caveat into it, because she has the right to be buried in the lot.
Yep.
But yet the lot ownership goes to that oldest surviving
son. She has that right to use that space to be buried there, but she doesn't have any ownership of the lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
which
is
confusing to people.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But so now if you're, so then what you do is, for us at least, what we recommend is that you would create paperwork, an affidavit, that I don't know if you do affidavits on this, and just write it up stating that, you know, so-and-so came into the office, states that they are the oldest surviving child of John Smith. Jenny Smith came to the office and said they are the oldest surviving child of John Smith, and, you know, use different language.
Yep.
There was no spouse that was living at the time of death, or the spouse died since then and is buried elsewhere in this specific location.
Yeah. We have an heirs list that we put out, and then, you know, provided by who's giving us this information. Where is it coming from? And if it's really getting deep and we're not figuring much out with an heirs list, then a lot of times that's when, you know, like a major affidavit comes in, and, you know, someone passed away in 1950 and there's nobody left to, you know, contest a marker, and there's no marker on the lot, and the great grandson wants to put a marker on the lot.
Yep.
Well, then we have him sign that affidavit saying that if any such person from this heirs list, you know, resurfaces after the marker comes out, we have to remove the marker. It's up to them.
Yep.
And, you know, but I always tell people, I'm like, it's been, you know, 60 years without a marker. I don't think people are going to complain if you put something that has their name, someone's name on it.
Yep, yep.
But you have to understand that you have to sign this, and
we'll be legally obligated to pull that.
Yeah. And people, they laugh, but, you know, I haven't seen it happen yet.
Yeah.
But that's not saying that it couldn't, right?
Yeah.
You know, now, someone comes out of nowhere, right?
And this might be a good time to state that this is what we do as practicing at our cemeteries. This is not, we are not lawyers, but this is just how we try to protect ourselves. And when we create these affidavits, we notarize them. We are all notaries in our office, because now an affidavit is a legal document. And this is how it protects the cemeteries, because let's say 5 years down the road, somebody comes in the office and says, no, I am the legal heir. I was the oldest surviving child of John. How did Jenny get buried there? Or how did she give permission? I'll pull out this affidavit and say, because Jenny came in here and she swore under oath in front of a notary that she was the oldest surviving child. If you have issue with that, take Jenny to court, not me. She swore to me in front of an affidavit.
Yep.
That's how the liability is pulled away from the cemetery.
And, I mean, again, I haven't had any problems with any affidavit that's ever been signed in my time.
Well,
you know,
I've had it where people will come in and you can tell that they're making it up on the fly because they want it to go to a certain person, and they'll say, oh, yeah, so-and-so is the oldest, right? And they're like nudging the other person that's sitting with them, and they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, they're the oldest person. And then that's where I pull out again. Remember, you're signing a legal affidavit in front of a notary that you are not making a false testimony here, and this could be used in court against you, and all of a sudden people start freaking out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're right. Actually, she's not the oldest. So it's nice to be able to put the kind of pressure on people. People don't like to make false statements, especially when it's very legal. An affidavit is a very legal document.
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
When it's just signing a name to something and it's not in front of a notary or anything like that, people are a little bit more apt to lie.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because we had a gentleman come in and he's like, oh yeah, I got no siblings, blah 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 blah. 2 days later the sister calls and she's like, did my you know, a-hole brother and brother come in here and try to tell you that he doesn't have any siblings because there's six of us, you know? And I go, oh, yeah. And I said, he was going to take home the affidavit, fill it out, and then come in and have it notarized, yep, you know? Yep. Or stop at the bank and have it notarized. She's like, yeah, there's six of us, you know? Never saw the guy again, right?
Yep.
And so, again, I haven't had any troubles with it. But, you know, it is confusing to people, too, right? Especially if it was pre-1981, because then it went to the eldest son.
Yeah. So let's go over what the law is right now. So currently it goes, if it goes to the oldest surviving child with, what's the right that they call it for the wife, the spouse, living spouse? It's
right of burial, a right of interment.
They have a specific name, but basically right of burial. Yes.
Yeah.
But
they do.
There's a specific name in there, and I wish
where's Ron when you need him?
But anyways, it goes to the oldest, for just ease, it goes to the oldest surviving child with the right of burial to the spouse. If there is no children, then it goes to the youngest surviving sibling of the person. Remember, this is Minnesota state law. And I think the thought philosophy, and this is where you get quite a bit of pushback from folks too, who are sitting there and they're a middle child, like, oh, why did it go to the youngest survivor? Why did I get skipped? Why didn't it go to me?
Yeah.
Well, it's because I think, and obviously I'm trying to get in the head of lawmakers, and that's a dangerous place to be. but my thought philosophy here is, I think that their thought philosophy is that the youngest surviving sibling is going to outlive everybody. It's going to be in their name longest.
Longer. Yeah.
So then, if there is no surviving siblings of the person, then it goes to the spouse, if there was a spouse living. Now, most likely there might not be. So if there is no spouse, then it all goes to the cemetery in trust. Mm-hmm. So the cemetery then can deem who can be buried in the lot. Nobody owns that lot now. It doesn't. So ownership. So if somebody if there's an open grave and somebody wants to try to sell it or transfer it, no one can do that. Yep.
And then it's first come, first serve.
Well, this is how however a cemetery would like to proceed. How we handle these situations is somebody comes forward and says, "Hey, you know, the last lot owner was my great uncle. I don't maybe however the relationship is." What I would state is there anybody else that has that same lineage or closer lineage to that person in your family? Well, there's two of us. I said, well, have them sign off on it stating they're cool with you being buried there, and I'll give you permission for you to be buried there. That's not a problem. So then the cemetery I'd create another form that they would sign in front of a notary stating that's right, and I'd give permission to so-and-so. We have the right as the cemetery to deem who can be buried there in who's proper. So basically it's just entrust to the cemetery.
Yeah. And how we do it for us, because, you know, this gets tricky for us with these big old lots.
Oh yeah.
And so how we do it is, you know, well, you know, we need one for Dick and Marge and Francis and John. And it's like, no. It's first come, first serve.
Oh yeah.
We don't get to pick. You know, there's 10 graves and there's 12 people.
Yep.
You don't get to pick, right? Like, it's just if one person passes, then they can use that one.
Well, first and come, first serve as in death.
Death.
It's correct. Not who comes in and says, hey, I want permission.
Yep. We don't get to sit and pick out each one because this is in trust.
Yep.
You know, so it's for blood relatives to use when they pass, not for you to pick. Well, John's going to be here and Jane's coming here. And so that's kind of how we do it, you know, as far as those. But it gets tricky because we've got these big old lots where there'll be, you know, six cousins or 10 cousins left. And then, like, you know, each family has a row and they have 40 graves.
Oh, yeah.
And 20 are used.
Yep.
But they're buried in rows as their families go.
Yep. Yep.
And it's like, okay, well, we'll try to keep that, but we also aren't gonna like let you just come and pick wherever, you know. So it gets pretty tricky, and we don't have a ton of them in trust anymore. Most of those ones have been used by now, but we still do have some big old lots that, you know, were maybe 60 40 graves at one time, and they still have, you know, 20 of them left or 18 of them left.
So then now also for placing markers and monuments, that's up to the cemetery to deem who's proper as well.
Yeah.
We typically go down the road of, okay, if the person's buried there and you want to make a memorial for that person, fantastic. That's fine. Or because we allow permissions, if somebody were to come and we figure it out, okay, we'll allow that marker.
Yeah.
No names without permissions. Obviously, we don't even allow that for any of the other lots we have. But also, we're probably a little bit more particular in these cases, which I've never run into an issue about slang words or, you know, offbeat meanings, because I just don't want any other family members to come in and say, why is that marker there and why does it say that? It's so weird.
Sure.
Like, it just has to be pretty generic.
Yeah.
Just because we're the ones that are deeming this proper, and I don't know how many other family members might be out there that might take offense to something that could be in some kind of slang language. It has to be pretty pretty simple.
Some of our old trusts say, and we will leave this in trust to any blood relative, but also know that the markers need to match what is on the lot.
Yeah.
You know, which is wild to see in this, you know, feather pen writing from 1915.
Yeah.
But that's what a lot of it is. And then, but a lot of times these families that are that with that big, they're like, well, we want to match what's ever on the lot.
Yes.
So we want to keep it in unison because everything looks great here, you know?
Yeah.
So,
The other thing, caveat to throw in on this is for the affidavit of updating titles, because this comes to play quite a bit, because everybody thinks that, no, I inherited this lot because of a will, because my dad or great whoever stated in their will that all my belongings and property go to so-and-so. Well, under Minnesota state statute, which is, again, I really appreciate the fact that they say this in there, that there's a separate caveat for wills for cemetery lots, and it says that you have to have it has to specifically state the cemetery lot in your will. So it can't just say all my property.
Yeah.
Basically, what it needs to say, for instance, in our cemetery, it need to say I something John Smith, whatever, give my burial lot, Block 31, Lot 154, Grave Number 2 in Union Cemetery Association to so-and-so.
Yeah.
If it doesn't say that specifically, I'm sorry. We don't, you can, it's not given in a will, and it goes to the right of inheritance.
What do you mean? I'm power of attorney. Doesn't that mean I can be buried here? How many times you heard that one?
Well, that's the other thing. Power of attorney dies when they die.
Yeah.
People don't understand that either.
Yeah. I'm power of attorney.
Well, but he just died.
Your family member passed away 10 years ago. What do you mean you're power of attorney?
Yeah, you can't be power of attorney. Exactly.
Yeah. We've heard that one a few times.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. So unless they produce a will that specifically states that cemetery lot, then you have to follow the lineage.
But boy, people get really frustrated with that. But, I mean, could you imagine if it just took, you know, like you said, whatever, you know, John Smith says, oh, you know, Jenny Smith gets my two graves at Oakland.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, what two graves and where, and you know, and that's the thing. We've had them come in where people gave away their graves that they didn't own to begin with.
Yeah,
you know, here you can have my space, that burial plots. Doesn't say the cemetery. Doesn't say anything else. They're like, yeah, my dad swears up and down he had four graves here.
Well,
no, he does not.
And how often does that happen too? When people come in and like, oh, my sister's got a grave out there. Mom and dad bought three graves. They always told us that third grave is for her. Like, yeah, they may have told you that. They didn't tell us that.
Yeah.
And we have nothing in writing stating that that's the case. And I can't just bury somebody because you state mom and dad said that.
Yeah.
That frustrates people to no end.
Yeah.
But back to inheritance, so that is the current law in the state of Minnesota. As it goes to recap, goes to the right of inheritance, or spouse has the right to be buried there, goes to oldest surviving child. If no oldest surviving child, then it goes to youngest surviving sibling. If no youngest surviving sibling, goes to spouse. If no spouse, then it goes to the cemetery and trust. Now, if it was before, again, don't quote me, I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe it's April 15th, 1981.
I think that's what, it was either April 15th or April 1st, but I think it's
somewhere
the 15th.
Around there.
I don't think they did it on April Fool's Day, but I think it's April 15th if you're...
So if it's prior to that, and I think the time they changed it before that was 1961, I can't remember. But there was really a minor change at that time. So I'm just going to go with this, and we're not going to go any further. But there is laws in front of this one. I think it was in the 60s at some time. So any burial after the 60s.
Yeah, I think it was 35 and then – or 33 or and then like 61, 62, yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
But the only change in it really was the spouse again only had the right to be buried there. Yeah. And it goes instead of oldest surviving child, it was oldest surviving son.
Yeah.
So that was the law before 1981 was oldest surviving son. And that really anybody they just freak out that that's the possibility.
Yeah.
But that's the way the law was written. It goes the oldest surviving son. Now, I wish I did have this in front of me. Now, if there was no oldest surviving son, I do believe it goes to the oldest surviving child. I can't remember.
I think it did. I don't have it in front of me either.
Yeah.
We hope not to get this far. And if we do, it's that highlighted page that's down in the desk drawer, right? I mean, some people are a little more versed on this, these laws, when it gets into fine tooth comb with some of the stuff.
It's so rare I guess I shouldn't say it's rare to get this, but to find somebody that died before 1981 and we're updating the title, but it always goes to the oldest surviving son.
Yeah, I mean, when people are updating titles at this point in time, then it's usually, in that capacity.
Yeah.
But, the frustrating part is when... Jenny comes in and finds out, again, she's a middle child, finds out that Billy...
She's the oldest and her younger brother inherited it over her.
Yeah. or Billy's in California, wants nothing to do with it.
And they don't talk.
And then they get upset with you. And it's like, well, this, it has to be eldest child. And this is when they try to spin it. Well, I don't think Billy's around. Well, then it goes to Billy's eldest. And then they're like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, yes, it doesn't come back to you. Now is in Billy's family.
Yep.
And so then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, Billy's calling you saying, I didn't know I owned property, but my sister I haven't talked to in 10 years just reached out, and I don't want anything to do with it. What do I need to do? Well, we'll send you this, and you have to sign this saying that you don't want anything to do with it, get it notarized. Jeez, this is a lot of work to not want graves. And I'm like, well, it's kind of how it works.
And isn't it funny? Because this is where you really get in the middle. And I try so hard. I think I've mentioned on this podcast, I try so hard not to get in the middle of family disputes. And it seems like this is where you really get into the middle of it. Or folks just think, well, you'll reach out to Billy for me.
Yeah.
No, that is not my job. I'm not calling some guy out of the blue. I'm not calling somebody out of the blue and saying, hey, oh, by the way, I'm from a cemetery in Minnesota. Like, no,
haven't spoken to your family in 20 years, but they're wondering if they can get the graves that you stand to inherit.
Yeah.
They want to know if they can get them from you, even though you haven't talked to them in 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let me sign those over right away. Usually the person on the other end of the line is going, well, how much can I get for them?
Or the other thing, what I experience is because the person wants you to do something or they haven't talked to this person so bad, they want to sell it to you that this person is the most evil person in the world, and they tell you the most vile stories about their brother, and it's like, I don't care, please stop, I don't need to hear this, I don't know this guy, I don't care to know this guy, I don't care to know about your family drama, just stop. But they insist on telling you all this stuff, and then 3 days later Billy's on the phone with you and he's the nicest guy in the world. You're like, my gosh, I just heard the most vile things about
you. Did you really murder your cat back in 77? No, who said that? Did she tell you that?
It's so funny. And it's like, they're like the most chill, like cool person. You're like, oh, I think I know who the outlier on this one. It wasn't you, Billy.
But all of this stuff goes back, and part of the management course at the MAC,
we'll go over,
it was going to go over a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're new to running a cemetery, if you're old to running a cemetery, if you're not sure on things, these are the things you need to be sure on.
These are so important, because this will get you tripped up, because people will come after you if you let somebody else be. This is what the headline in the paper is going to look like. Somebody who had no relation or whatever got buried in family lot and with cemetery's permission, or you know, and it's not going to look good in your favor. You have to follow the law.
Yeah, and you have to be strict on this. Yeah. And get the affidavit signed, get the verifications, because if you don't, then you're in big trouble, right? Like, you know, like you said, the people, Johnny is the oldest brother. Yep. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, you're signing this affidavit stating that everything you're telling me is true.
Yeah.
And this isn't a false testimony. I'm not positive if, there was that one other one that might be a couple years older, you know?
Yeah, and here's the way I look at it. I know we are in the business of helping families at an emotional time and a time of need, and we're very caring people. I know there's a lot of people out there who say I'm not caring. Because
true.
But if you're in this industry, you are. And so you want to please. And when somebody comes in and they want to bury somebody on this lot, you want to bend over backwards to be able to help this person. However, your number one responsibility as a cemetery manager is to look out for the liability of the cemetery.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you're just going to, if when it comes to state law and it doesn't follow state law, you're going to have to tell the family no. And this is the reason why we need to follow Minnesota state law, because I need to protect the cemetery. I can't do something against the law that's going to put the cemetery in jeopardy in the future, potentially, just because you need me to do you a favor.
Yeah. And the biggest thing in it, you're probably going to get yelled at. You're probably going to get screamed at. They're going to tell you have no compassion. They're going to tell you you have no soul.
It's so true.
And, you know, you have to stand your ground.
The thing is, you do have a soul and you do have compassion because you're doing the right thing. But you're just not doing what they want you to
but
do.
But here's the deal. You're protecting, you know, like, you know, I talk about we've got, you know, 60-some thousand burials at Oakland. You're protecting the other 60,000 burials that are there. Right. You're protecting the six people in the back that work on your grounds, the gal in the office or the two gals in the office that work in your office. Like, that's who you're protecting.
Yeah.
Because if a lawsuit happens, big chunks of money get taken away from your cemetery because, you know, you didn't do the right thing or you didn't follow state statutes. Who does that hurt? That hurts the cemetery. It hurts all the employees of the cemetery. It hurts the people who are buried in the cemetery because it takes away from the beautification of the cemetery. Yep. So there's so much more to it.
Oh, there is. And that's where we become absolute jerks. I mean, it's just like rules and regulations. You got to stand your ground, because if you just allowed people to do whatever they wanted, well, you're opening it yourself up for a huge liability.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it, you know, earlier with your watering cups, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they just,
no,
you know,
good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, a guy came out, you know, put two watering cups for every spigot, and then he passes on, and you guys are expected to keep it going, and if it's not perfect, everyone complains about it.
Yep.
So,
you're exactly right.
You know, I mean, it just goes to show that stuff. So,
yeah, hopefully we could shed some insight. Like I said, I get emails on this fairly consistently.
I can imagine. This is a huge question I get, and again, even as a, you know, 20 some year veteran to the cemetery business, you know, some of it I have to double take and look back through the law.
Yeah, you usually call me up. Right?
Yeah. And double take and look back through the law just so I'm like, okay, I'm saying the right stuff here. This is exactly how it is. But sometimes I have to double check. So if you're new and stuff, you know, like, this is part of it, right? You're not going to know everything and you're not going to memorize everything. You have so many things that you're going to be doing throughout a day, but these are big things. And this is the time right now, right? Baby boomers are coming in. They're trying to figure out if their great grandparents or grandparents had more lots, more graves, if they can use them, if we can put an urn in this lot. Yeah. How does that work? And so that's why you have to be pretty well versed on this stuff.
Yeah, and I wanted to record this just so we could have a conversation about it, because it's when people can listen to it. spelled out the hopefully the way we did it, and just listen to kind of two guys talking about how we handle it in our cemeteries. It maybe be comprehended a little bit easier than me sending it in an email.
Maybe. I mean, that was pretty mediocre, but well,
but at least I can now send an email to folks, say, hey, listen to episode 26 of the Cemetery Chronicles. We kind of go over it on the second half of the show.
Or come to the Minnesota Association of Cemeteries That's management course, because you know
we will go over this.
And it's the thing that again, not to say that Dominic and I do this all by ourselves. We have a great board and a bunch of people that help out, but it's something that as a board and as a group that is pushing for the MAC to keep going, we pride ourselves right now on giving knowledge to newer members, because again, Dominic and I, at one time, we were these young guys. Yep. Then everyone was 60 years old, 65. And
it was
now,
just a couple of years ago.
And now all of a sudden, everyone that was that age is retired, and we're the old guys. And so.
But the other thing is, and we want to make sure everybody has the proper and correct knowledge, because when there's a bad headline about a cemetery in the newspaper or in the news, it's not just a black eye for that cemetery or in that community. It's a black eye for all of us, because people don't differentiate between that cemetery and that city. What they see is
Stillwater,
all cemeteries
Maplewood,
are
Forest Lake. It doesn't matter where you're at. If you're in the state of Minnesota, they say, oh, that cemetery is terrible. I bet so.
All cemeteries are the same.
Yeah, the other ones do the same thing. So
if we can spread knowledge and everybody can do everything within the law, it helps the cemetery industry as a whole. We're just trying to spread that knowledge. But anyways, hopefully people found that helpful. And and I'll tell you what, it's been fun. I've had a lot of fun doing this podcast with you, Bobby. It's hopefully people are finding it enjoyable.
I mean, I have fun every week, but yes this one was fun too.
So anyways, another weekend. We are just getting closer and closer to fall and getting ready for, you're getting your snow plow ready.
Getting our leaf truck ready to go, and we got a lot of leaves to pick up.
Yeah, so. What year is that? 1950?
So, well, we had an older one. We just bought one, a 91 now. Now we have a 91.
Okay. 91, so, but 91, that's still 30 years old.
Yeah, well, it gets used for three weeks out of the year.
Well, no, but exactly.
We still paid like $20,000 for this thing. So,
trucks are crazy now, aren't they?
Yep.
But anyways, well, maybe we'll chat about that a little bit more next time. But I hope everybody found it a little bit informative, and then everybody's having a good end of the summer. And any last parting words?
No, get those registrations in for the MAC.
Yes.
We want to get these numbers, the highest ones we've had in a long time. So
I'm looking forward to seeing everybody. So, but we'll chat with you next week on our podcast, and hopefully we'll see you in September at the conference.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast so you are notified when new shows are posted. If you would like to get a hold of us, please email us at info@thecemeterychronicles.com.
When it comes to honoring a life well-lived, every detail matters. That's why Paradise Pictures has been crafting premium, high-fired porcelain on steel portraits since 1991. Built to last a lifetime, guaranteed against any damage. Whether it's monuments, markers, crypts, or glass front niches, Paradise Pictures offers a full suite of personalized memorialization solutions, including elegant bronze frames. As a proud member of the Minnesota Association of Cemeteries, they believe samples sell products, so they're offering you a free first job just for listening. Visit ParadisePictures.com or call 1-800-960-8040 to request yours today. Paradise Pictures, preserving memories beautifully.
Managing a cemetery comes with a lot of responsibilities, but with Sims, it doesn't have to be overwhelming. Sims Cemetery software helps you keep track of burial records, maps, and maintenance tasks all in one secure, easy-to-use system. With intuitive mapping, secure record keeping, and cloud-based access, Sims makes organization simple. Ready to see how Sims can make you streamline your cemetery operations? Visit SimsCemeterySoftware.com to learn more. Also, if you mention that you heard about us on the Cemetery Chronicles podcast, Sims will give you a 10% discount on a new software license.